Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Philosophy Guy. So today, I'm going to get into some Eastern philosophy and kind of apply it to our mindset in a way, or basically trying to make it applicable to our everyday life, or, you know, kind of the whole model of the show. But so I started researching Eastern philosophy more with the goal to compare Buddhism and Stoicism, just because, like, every self-help podcast under the sun is covering Stoicism. So, like, although I did cover that, so I can't completely make fun of that type of stuff because I do think it's beneficial, I do want to see more comparisons of the two, because Buddhism and Stoicism share a lot of kind of principles, but I don't even know if the right way is to say principles, kind of reasoning, but the foundational principles are a little bit different. So I want to make a comparison of those two, since even with, like, the mindfulness stuff and the meditation stuff that's really trending across the, you know, world in general, and a lot in the U.S. and the business world, I thought it would be beneficial to start researching to find a comparison between the two and to kind of say the benefits of both, maybe something along those lines. It's still in the early stages. But anyway, so I actually think Buddhism provides some more practical insights for your everyday life. So since my university didn't really cover Eastern philosophy at all, actually, I've been going on my own little Eastern philosophy research journey. But anyways, as always, I would like to say thanks for listening to the show. I'd like to say thank you to Steve and Casper for recently becoming patrons on Patreon. And contributions like yours allow me to spend more time on my obsession. As for the Patreon bonus feed, I've been better about, you know, adding episodes, because that's been my goal. Is I want to add a bunch of episodes, just shorter version, kind of my thought process. Recent episodes have included discussion of problem with politics, truth and ego, psychedelics, and morality. So, and lastly, I'm happy to see the Discord has been starting to grow a little bit more and starting to have some more fun convos there. But enough of that blah, let's get right into it. So, Eastern philosophy and the Buddha slash kind of Buddhism have always had very similar goals to Eastern philosophy, making us wiser, less agitated, more thoughtful, more appreciative of our lives, yada, yada. Basically, philosophy shares, you know, they both sides share in this understanding that when it comes to understanding the world or the universe, we should find a way to improve it, not only overall, but prove it for ourselves. So the way that Eastern philosophy has gone about this, however, has been, I'd say, markedly different from its Western counterpart. Western philosophers look more to kind of like the intellectual pursuits through like the discovery of knowledge, understanding the truths, and they do this through reading and writing and whatnot, kind of that thought process. This isn't to say that Eastern philosophy lacks in reading and writing, but the way Eastern looks to find truth is different, and the what they prioritize, I would say, is different. You know, where Eastern philosophy uses different methods of teaching, such as, you know, just contemplating during a tea drinking session in a nice, beautiful, sunny day, or taking walks and sitting around the pond simply reflecting on life. These are things that were prioritized in understanding life in Eastern philosophy. So Western philosophers have done this as well. You know, that you hear about Western philosophers having routines. For example, Nietzsche, he would basically take a hike in this mountain range every day and eat a bunch of fruit. That was his ritual. You know, that is kind of his contemplation ritual. But Western philosophers, you know, they don't prioritize that as much. It's more the way we understand truth is our writing process and our intellectual process in that way. So in the East, figures such as Confucius and Buddha advocate the importance of mindfulness, compassion, and love. So in preparing this episode, I was inspired by an article I found about how mindfulness has become trendy. So this is a little bit of a side note. And I agree, it has become very much trendy. And when things become trendy and there's like this big cultural movement, a lot of times, you know, the nuance in understanding mindfulness has kind of been left aside. It's mindfulness itself has been grouped under this one umbrella. I know those that really do understand mindfulness will know the differences, but overall, you know, and even I'm faulty of this. I'm definitely not perfect by any means on this type of stuff. But mindfulness actually has just very various perspectives on understanding and what type of mindfulness you're doing and what type of meditation you're doing. And that has been left out in kind of our current cultural trend. So I will say I'm holding back on the episode of kind of explaining those differences, because I feel like I need a better understanding and grasp of mindfulness myself, because I'm still very much a beginner on that type of stuff. But in these lessons that I've been covering, I'll be covering in the remainder, they'll be covered in that article. And I'm still researching that process. But anyway, so what is the noble truth of the Buddha? So the noble truth of the Buddha is basically life is suffering, you know, which is, we have that idea in Western philosophy, like such as existentialism, but the Buddhism takes a little bit of a different route. So life is unavoidably filled with misery. Sex will disappoint us. The youth we all have will soon fade, or all had, I guess you could say. And I'm quickly figuring that one out. And money won't spare us pain. You cannot avoid the pain of life. So suffering comes for us all, essentially, and we need to accept that. So in the eyes of the Buddha, we should all accept these shortcomings of life. We should experience ourselves living in our homes, sitting alone with our thoughts, allowing the dread of existence, and even imagining we live in a veritable dunghill. Dreary, right? It seems like a dreary philosophy, right? Well, you see, for the Buddha, he had an understanding that the drudgery of life, the misery and the sadness that will rear its head once again is inevitable. So allowing ourselves to kind of understand this inevitable mystery, this inevitable truth of life and of the human condition will enable us to have no grudge or bitterness in having been unfairly let down, even betrayed. That said, so the Buddha was, you know, he was often surprisingly in good spirits, because listening to the last 30 seconds of what I just said, you'd be like, well, that guy's very pessimistic about life. But no, the Buddha was a jolly, happy man. You know, in every statue, he's basically smiling. He was commonly known to be cheery and, like I said, sporting a smile. So you might be wondering, you know, why? How can someone that focuses so much on the dreariness of life, the inevitable misery, how can he find happiness? Because anything nice, amusing, playful, cheerful, or beautiful that came his way was experienced as a bonus in life, as though it wasn't something owed to him, but rather it was an experience of receiving a deeply gratifying addition to his bleak understanding of life. So in a way, his acceptance of suffering made life more enjoyable. He did not see the world as owing him anything. He did not feel entitled. See, for him, entitlement created an expectation. Lack of the expectation means lack of the disappointment. You should almost expect disappointment. So all the bonuses in life, all the good things, are just an added bonus. We're not expecting those bonuses. So by accepting and paying mind to life's shortcomings, life's sadness, he strengthened his appreciation of what stood out against it. He teaches us the art of finding love through all the hate. So, raises the question here, what is the importance of self-reflection in this journey? So, extending from this principle, Buddhism tells us to focus on our self-reflection through meditation. And this is where this is kind of like almost like an intro episode, because I got to explain meditation better. But for today, for sake of time, we're going to kind of just use the broad general term of meditation. So something I need to work on myself. But anyway, you see, part of accepting the inevitable misery of life, we must do our part to extend those bonuses of life. We must reflect, understand, then pay forward our compassion, kindness, and love to others. We can learn to turn the kind of the ignorance into wisdom, anger into compassion, and greed into generosity. So for the Buddha, this was done through the practice of meditation, like I said, by reflecting, allowing ourselves to let go of those negative emotions, those negative impulses. We can then equip ourselves to extend the kind messages of compassion to others. So in a way, like the way I think of this, and something I've been contemplating, I'll probably throw on the bonus episode feed, we can create this kind of ripple effect of compassion. What I saw as reading about this, the goal of Buddhism. So our feelings towards people are not fixed and unalterable, but are open to change and improvement with the right understanding and right mindset we take forward in life every day. So for the Buddha, compassion is a learnable skill. and we are to practice extending it as much towards those we love as those we are very tempted to hate. Because at the end of the day, what does hate really give us? Hating others, getting pissed off at others. What does that give us? What joy does that provide us? Just look at our political discourse. Everyone seems to hate each other, right? Is it making things better by, you know, everyone just hating on each other and screaming at each other, yelling at the top of the roof, the world is ending? No. The situation has gotten worse over the past few years because the hate has gotten worse. It's not getting better. So by making an effort in the practice, this noble path, you know, loving kindness becomes, you know, a habit. Or that's at least the goal, is to try to make it a habit, a part of who we are. So why should we try to love those we hate? Because, you know, at first glance, you're like, well, if I hate them for a reason. Why the fuck would I, you know, why would I love them? But let's consider the idea of loving those we hate. We've all been there, hating someone at work. And, you know, I say this stuff, I don't know why. I should probably stop clarifying because it might get annoying. But any of the stuff I say, like this type of stuff, like, oh, we should do X because, you know, philosopher X said to do this. When I say that, just think of me as also trying to figure this out and practice it as well, just as much as you, the listener, because I am not saying I'm an expert, like, oh, I don't hate anyone. I just spread all love and that's all I spread, because that is not what I'm saying. I struggle with this as well, but like I always say, I use this as a reminder to myself. It's almost like as I'm saying this stuff, as I'm writing this stuff down, as I'm researching it, I'm educating myself back. It's like I'm reflecting it back into my mind, or trying to. So when I listen to this, I'm trying to take my own advice, is basically what I'm trying to say. I need someone to give me advice, and sometimes it needs to be myself to talk to myself and give it back. So anyway, let's consider the idea of love, loving those we hate. So we've all been there, hating someone at work, like I said, getting road rage at someone, cutting you off, or maybe feeling angry at someone else's political opinion. That's something I need to work on as well. And I've gotten a lot better, I will say that. But anyway, all this stuff I'm working on myself, like I say. So you see, we forget the grand landscape of the human condition, that the people all around us, they have different belief systems, and these people you view as bad guys don't think of themselves as bad guys. Life isn't like a superhero movie where the supervillain is wearing this dark, mysterious costume. He has this evil laugh with this dark backstory where you just know you're supposed to hate that guy because he's the bad guy. They talk as though they've essentially proclaiming they are the bad guy and they are just bad for the sake of being bad. No, in real life, let's say we, a bunch of us, agree on what a bad guy is. That bad guy is still probably going to perceive themselves as being a good guy. They don't go around being like, I'm going to do this because it is fucking evil. No, they don't do that. No, good versus evil in life isn't black and white. It's often gray. And Buddhism seems to understand this very well, which is why I find the school of thought of Eastern philosophy very interesting. There's no face of good and there's no face of bad. There's just us, just existing. There's just humanity, right? Now, some people might take that, oh, you're saying like we can't talk about what's good and bad and what's right and wrong. No, that's a complete oversimplification of straw man of what I'm saying, which we will also get into at later dates. I try to keep these episodes as concise as possible. But anyway, imagine that relative on Facebook, right? I avoid Facebook quite often because it's just a cesspool of just rambling. But so let's just imagine we all have that relative, we all do, I know, on Facebook that's ranting about their beliefs. They somehow complain about how they have no time to do things but can write a 2,000-word rambling fest on their political opinions on blah, blah, blah. But anyway, they don't view themselves as the bad guy, is my point. So here's a quote we have from Buddhism. In our process of hate, we forget that we are all flawed human beings. We are all shaped by uncontrollable variables that form the people we become. So we all struggle with understanding how to do the right thing, all of us. Many of us pretend to know exactly what the right thing to do is, that our moral compass is somehow perfect. It's not. None of us have a perfect moral compass, because that doesn't even mean? What does it even mean to have a good or bad moral compass? That's an episode idea, I guess, for another day. But however, what we can learn from the Buddhism and Eastern philosophy is that we can control, or at least try to control, our feelings, compassion, and love. And we can extend these to others with a mindful effort to alter our approach to life's suffering. And at a later episode, we will kind of look to explain how we can better do that, because I think part of the problem with Stoicism, and this is where we're getting into the comparison thing, Stoicism seems to think that you could just do it. You know, you just kind of start doing it. You know, oh, just don't let those things affect me. Yeah, I'll just snap my finger and my brain will work that way. No, Eastern philosophy is about a journey to actualizing these things I just said. It's not like you just snap your fingers, oh yeah, you're right, I should do that, and now I can just do that. That's not how it works, right? We all kind of know that. But anyway, like I said, I will say researching this episode made me realize I need to look into Eastern philosophy a lot more, and it's something I would do, an area of thought that is still behind in Western thinking, and that's why I wanted to kind of do some research on it and shed some light on it for you, the listener. So, as always, thanks for listening, and thanks to you for Patreon supporters. Check out Discord, hit me up on email, wherever you want to contact me, hit up the Twitter, all that stuff. Peace.